Position number 11939, rule 1.
Mr. John L. Williams, Reel 1. When and where were you born, Mr. Williams?
I was born on the 6th of February, 1913, in Black Hill, County Durham. On one side of where I was born, which was a small two-bedroomed house, there was the Primitive Methodist Church, and on the other side, a mart.
What kind of area were you born into?
Speaking working class area, very much so. There were very small houses. On the other side of the street from me, there were several rows of houses, which still exist as a matter of fact, and they were named Seaman Street, Rogers Street, Court Street, and Bessemer Street, all of whom were very famous people in the steel industry. And they were houses built by the Considine Iron Company. And the small house which we had was in a place called St. George's Place. I feel quite sure that St. George wouldn't have been particularly proud of the surroundings at that time, because although we had the Methodist Church and the Animal Mart on the other side of us, behind, we had the slag heap combined with coal heap of the tin mill drift and of the ironworks.
What kind of people, what background had the people in the area?
There were, first of all, my ancestors were Welsh, as usual, emanating from a Victorian iron and steel and mining area. There were a number of Welshmen, a very large number of Irishmen, mostly Roman Catholic Irishmen, with a few Protestant Irishmen among them, and they imported their feuds. So there were certain pubs, as I learnt later, there were certain pubs, if you were a Roman Catholic, you wouldn't go into. And if you were a Protestant, you wouldn't go into. I think that's all I would say. And then the usual bunch, let's say an enormous number of Welsh, the managers of the steelworks at that time, going right up to the head, were mainly Welsh from places like Dowlais and Morriston and places down in South Wales. I know there was a Mr. Jenkins, who was a manager. There was a Sir Edward George. At that time, he was just Mr. George, Sir Edward George. And my grandfather was Williams. And there was quite a bit of favoritism, I think, in that respect. And it was reasonably rough. There was a fair amount of drinking, as there always is in heavy working class area. A lot of my raggedness. I was slightly ragged myself at one stage as I got a bit older. But the usual thoughtless, cheerful existence with rows at weekends and the streets and that sort of thing.
What was your father's employment?
Well, he began working as a clerk in the steelworks, and then he moved to one of the collieries later on as a colliery clerk, and but which was a slight promotion. And then he moved into the storehouse and became a storekeeper for Chopwell Colliery. When he was at Consett, his employment wasn't sufficiently elevated to enable him to have a company house. And when he moved into the colliery, he had his name down on the list for a colliery house, but he attained full aristocratic status when he became a storekeeper, because we then got a three-bedroom company house, you know, which was rent-free. The wages weren't big, but it was rent-free.
Did you have brothers and sisters?
I had. I was the eldest of the family, but I had three sisters. One was born in 1914, one in 1919, and one in 1924.
And Did this in any way influence your upbringing in a household of women, in effect?
No. The only thing it did, which affected my life to some degree, until the army, was I was filled with a sense of responsibility, even as a small child. I had three younger sisters, and when I first started work, I had very small pay, but I also had very small pocket money, on the grounds that I helped, had to help to support my sisters. So I really adopted almost a paternalistic attitude when I was about 10 years old. You know.
Did your mother work?
No, my mother didn't. My mother, she didn't work outside, she just has. But she was, regrettably, she was a cheerful Irish woman. Cheerful, and completely feckless, unable to manage money at all. My father, when he attained the status of an official at the colliery, used to be paid fortnightly. And I gamble about, there were 26 paydays in a year, and I gamble on about 23 of them. We didn't eat the morning of payday, waiting for the dad to bring the pay. Quite incredible when I think of it.
What was your childhood like then? Was it a happy childhood?
Very happy. I had great luck to live in a country district, you know, in a country. Very happy. And very good school teachers, God bless them. I was capable of reciting all the verses of Gray's Elegy in a Country Churchyard when I was 9 years old.
Which school did you go to? Where did you start?
I started my school at Blackhall Mill School, which has now been demolished. But the teachers there, I look back, tremendous. They took the thing so seriously. When we were very young, the headmistress, in the infants, as we called it in those days, we were almost afraid of her. And it was towards the end of the 1418 war, and in the light of the development of things in Nazi Germany later, I often laugh to myself, but when we used to fall in outside in the school to schoolyard prior to marching into school, when one of the teachers sat down and played a tune as we marched in, the headmistress stood at the top of the steps, and we boys had to salute her, and every girl had to make a curtsy. And we also had in those days a lot of flag wagging, you know. The Union Jack was there, and we sang patriotic songs, three cheers for the red, white, and blue, and so on. And I feel I was very much influenced to a sense of duty to my country. And although we had a very starveling existence, I was almost had a Nazi sort of feeling. I was prepared to die for my country. I wasn't prepared to die for Hitler, but you understand, my country became very big in my mind. And I'm sure it was these teachers. On the other hand, when I moved into the other school, I moved in because I was supposed to be bright. In those days, the biggest class, or the highest class in the infants, was Standard 1. And then the big school, there was 2A and 2B, and then Standard 3. And I moved from Standard 1 into Standard 3.
You say the big school, where was this?
Next to it. Just across the schoolyard was the big school, we called it.
And what age was this move made?
7. So I was in the adult school, if you like, 7. But it was quite amazing when I look back. As I say, when I was 9 years old, I could recite Gray's Elegy in a Country Churchyard from end to end, and I think the 26 verses or something. And we had a school play in which of the assassination scene in Julius Caesar, and I was Mark Antony, gave the whole speech, including his oration. And also our music teacher. I was also singing things like Nymphs and Shepherds and Where A Walk, and things like Jocko Hazeldine, all these old. I was singing them often. I used to go home and teach my sisters. They used to sing, they knew Where A Walk, Cool Gale Shall Find the Glade, before they even knew what glades were. But they were exceptionally teachers. God bless them. I'm very grateful to them.
What subjects were you learning?
Well, at that time, we had English and arithmetic, the two basics, history, And then we had, I suppose we'd call English, but it was poetry and reading and so on. And these, you know, all the classics. I can still see there was a Mr. Tom Smith. There were two Mr. Smiths. One Mr. Tom Smith used to take us for literature, reading, poetry and so on. And Mr. Sidney Smith used to take us for music. But I can still see in my mind now when two class sitting with bated breath, I can still see Mr. Tom Smith walking up and down with the Tale of Two Cities in one hand and a handkerchief in the other, acting the part of Sidney Carton when he was drugging Charles Darnay, walking, and we watched every move as he was flicking his handkerchief in front of an imaginary Charles Darnay. And we were quite familiar with those when we were very, very small. It was quite amazing.
What was the discipline like?
Very stern. Very stern. You got the stick, you literally got the stick on your hand. And I mean, I used to get the stick. My mother, as they say, was a bit feckless. Many times I was late. I may have been a clever boy and could do all these things, but I had to hold my hand out. We lined up outside the headmaster and he whacked us and so on. It was mostly on the hands, but there was the odd teacher, very soon, who used to slap your face or nip your ear like that, you know. But in the main, I don't think sadism had ever entered into our lives at those days. But certainly, and there again, I just accepted that people got the cane if they transgressed, even though it would not be their responsibility, you know.
You didn't feel any resentment?
No resentment whatsoever. If any resentment, it was for being such a fool as to have to get the stick. But in that, I have no feeling except gratitude and honour for those teachers, even though they did whack me. It didn't do me any harm.
Did you stay in what you call the big school for the rest of your education?
No, no. I moved up from this Blackhall Mill School up to Chopwell School.
About what time did this be?
This was 1923, so I was 10 years old. And my education was a little bit moving to another school with different people, and literally it was different. Everyone at Chopwell was mining people, you know, and a lot of them very bolshy. I remember I sat down beside a very nice bloke who introduced me to himself as Clifford Lawther. And he said his name Clifford was German, and he was a socialist, and he must have been, because he was killed in the Spanish Civil War in the International Brigade later on. And it was just a little bit rougher, if one can use that term, and a lot. There was much more beating with a stick, because there were one or two lads who, if the teacher told them to come out, they refused, and they'd hold on to the desk. I was horrified by the violence, you know. You find a lad being dragged out and belabored around the shoulders, and the desk going out at him as he was holding on. It was a much rougher sort of element. As I said, and then I was nearly 11 when I went there. And then when I was 12, I passed to go to Bladen Secondary School, which was grammar school later. But I didn't pass free, I had to pay. So I had to pay, I think it was £2.10 a quarter or something like that, a term. But I went there to the Bladen School. We travelled down on the train from High Westwood Station to Swalwell Station. It was a railway then. We used to walk from Chopwell, which was about couple of miles down the valley and up the other side. Didn't do us any harm. I stayed there till I was 16 and a half. I took the Oxford examination. I got 5 credits and 3 passes. And
do you recall the subjects?
There were 8 subjects, and I passed with credit in English, history, religious knowledge, French written and oral, and chemistry. And I only got a satisfactory in Latin and geography and mathematics.
Did you then have to go on to another examination?
No. I was 16 and a half at that time, and I made inquiries, and I discovered that this was the equivalent for matriculation at Armstrong College of Durham University. There was no Newcastle University in those days. but I had to take it up before 1931. And Mr. Wilson, who was our headmaster, had me in, and he said, that would certainly qualify me for an £80 Durham County Council exhibition. It was £80 per year. And a £30 maintenance, which would be £110. And he felt that on that I would be able to pay my bus fare from Chopwell to Newcastle and get my books, and otherwise would have no sort of an existence other than that. And I was quite prepared to do that. But I suddenly realized that the times living on a shoestring, I should be earning some money to help to support my family. Yet again, an ingrained desire to assist my family came in, so I turned it down. So that my great desire at that stage was to get a degree in English and history. But I never arrived.
Looking back on all of your school life, do you feel that it was a good education?
Yes, I feel quite sure. I mean, considering circumstances and so on, it was a good education. I mean, just the other night, there was a program on television with some boys at Pucker Public School were getting a Latin lesson. I've instantly recognized, even now, that it was Caesar's Gallic Wars. After all these years, and I've done Latin since. And I thought it was very good. Particularly, I've always had a love of books. It was entirely engendered by the good quality teaching. What I wasn't very good at were things like woodwork and so on. And I sometimes feel, looking back now, that one of the reasons I wasn't very good was because our master, who did those sort of things, he also took some of the junior mathematics, was without doubt a bully. And he must have had a great amount of pleasure. I suppose in later years, one would say he almost got a sexual pleasure out of being able to browbeat poor helpless infants, young people, you know. And I think perhaps I might have been able to make a box and do a little bit better in maths if I'd had a better teacher at that time. But it wasn't a long-lasting thing. I didn't sort of brood about it. A lot of my views are perhaps arrived at in retrospect. But in general, I was very happy. And it gave me a thirst for the accumulation of knowledge. Because although I didn't go on anywhere in full-time education, I had a whole lot of evening classes. I went to evening classes for years and years and years after, when I started work.
Was there any teacher, one teacher, who had any important influence in your life? Certainly early years.
Well, it's very difficult to say, because they seem to be all imbued with a sense of responsibility and duty towards the people. And in some way or other, from them, I continue to pick up, even in the bad post-war years of strikes and lack of money and lack of proper food and clothing, that sort of thing, I seem to pick up a continued stream of patriotic enthusiasm for my country. So I think they're, in general, I don't think there's any particular one.
When did you leave school?
I left in 1929.
And what did you do?
I went straight away. I had already obtained work as a clerk at Concert Iron Company's offices. So I went to work in the buying department, Concert Iron Company, at the supreme wage of 10 shillings a week.
And how many hours a week was that?
That was 9 till 5, from Monday to Friday, and 9 till 12 on a Saturday.
How did you take to the work and discipline of life, of working life?
Well, the thing was this, I was used to discipline at school, so that didn't worry me. And first of all, I was very lucky to have a job in those days, and I settled in without any problem. I enjoyed it. I began at that stage to realize that I'd been fortunate. This sounds terribly snobbish, but it's wrong to say I had more intelligence, but I had a a more literate outlook on life than a lot of my contemporaries. You know, some of the boys had started when they were 14. I started when I was 16, you know. But I didn't have any trouble. Just thank God every day that I had a job, you know. But as I said, the economics of the situation, looking back on them now, I was paid 10 shillings a week. And of that, I paid a shilling and a halfpenny, stamps, which left me with 8 and 11 halfpenny. My bus fare from Chopwell for a 12-journey ticket was 5 shillings. So that left 3 and 11 halfpenny. For my mum to keep me on. And she used to give me 6 pence a week pocket money. Some days she was too hard up to give me that, but no complaint. I didn't smoke and I enjoyed life. And the other thing I feel I must think, my grandfather, he'd been one of the early workers up here, a Welsh steel worker. My father had worked at the works. And the blast furnaces and the trucks rolling back and forward and this plate mill and things like that. I felt as though I was part of that great organisation, the Considine Company. Didn't look very much beyond it at that stage.
Living in the area you did with the people around you that were the type you described, was there any envy that you were intellectual and they weren't so?
No, no. The funny thing was, there was more envy or contumely because my father was an official at the colliery. And at one stage in 1926, when there was a miners' strike and so on, there was a lot of picketing at the pit, and the officials, of whom my father was one, were lodged up at the pit. My father used to sleep in the storehouse, in the ambulance room and so on, and they never saw us. And I early, so to say, enhanced my patrol ability, which I used later in the war, by creeping through the picket, around the picket lines and creeping up and seeing my father and coming back down again without them seeing me. They had all sorts of circuitous ways. But because my father was an official and a lot of the lads were, there was a certain amount of an attempt to push round, you know. And I was a very pacific sort of boy, but every now and then I had to get to the stage when there was a ring formed and I had to get stuck in. Sometimes I won, more times I lost, but well, that was more envy than anything else, nothing intellectual.
Were you with the Concert Iron Company for the rest of your working life
no.
up to the war?
No, I was with the Concert Iron Company. First of all, I was in the buying department. I went through a succession of union classes for which the Concert Iron Company gave prizes and so on. And
you were expected to do this, where you go to union classes?
You were expected to go to second year evening classes. I went to sixth year. But it didn't compel you after that, you know. And they give a prize for second, third and fourth year, which I got. But nothing for fifth and sixth year. And to go to fifth and sixth year, one had to go down to Newcastle, to one of the College of Commerce down there, you know, in the evening. But in 1937, the end of 1937, or beginning of 1938, I'm not sure, the Considine Company lent me out to the British Iron and Steel Corporation down in Tothill Street, Westminster, the accounts department, where I reached a new degree of middle-class affluence because I got £5 a week basic. And if I worked overtime, Monday to Friday, I got another £1.05, which I did regularly because I enjoyed myself to begin. So I had the princely sum of £6.05 a week. My digs cost me £2.15. My bus fare was about £5, that was £3. And I used to send a couple of quid home to my mother, sometimes 30 bob, sometimes 2 quid, just to help the family out. And I was there for about 6 months. I found it very interesting. One of my joys, incidentally, was after I'd been working late, I used to just slip down, I used to look out of the window, and I used to see the lantern burning and big bin. The house was still sitting. So I used to go into the house in the gallery then, listen to the debates and so on in the gallery before I got the bus to my digs and so on. And I came back to Concert And I was in the cashier's department then. And I was there for a while, and I got a chance of another job down on the Team Valley Trading Estate, Sigmund Pumps Limited. And I was with them as an account department, assistant accountant, until 1939, when I was called up.
What was the wage in the latter months?
I think I was getting somewhere in the region of £4, which was called in those days, ironically, I think, upstanding. In other words, you weren't paid so much a shift, you were paid a weekly salary of £4. And if you had an hour or two off, they didn't mind, you know, that sort of thing. But it was making progress.
Had you in your younger years been attracted to the Scouts or the Cubs or the Boys Brigade?
Not in my younger years. I was attracted, but the uniform was too costly for Arthur. But I was, later on, when I was living down in Yorkshire, I was assistant scouter, then scouter, and then senior scoutmaster. I even had the boys camping up Buttsfield up here, when from Yorkshire. You know.
On what date did you join the Territorial Army?
April 1932.
What brought this about?
Well, I had always wanted to join the regular army. The Durham Light Infantry, strange enough. And it was the old story. I couldn't afford to, because I had to help the family. And in those days, a soldier got 2 shillings a day. And I couldn't have done very much for my family on that. And so the next best thing I could do, when I was 19 years old, I joined the local concert company of the 6th Battalion, the Durham Light Infantry. I always wanted to, and incidentally, my uncle had been in the Concert Volunteers before the 1418 War, which became the 6th Battalion Durham, you know. And he was a quartermaster when war started, and he was commissioned, and he was a company commander in the Durhams. He was a company commander when they were attacking the Butte de Waal Corps and places like that in the Somme Battle. And I always remember I joined the Territorial Army, and my uncle was chief accountant at the concert. And there were immediately cries, especially from older people who should know better, trying to suck in with your uncle, are you, and keep your job all right by joining the Territorials. And they were very surprised and thought I was being very offensive when I burst into shrieks of laughter. What they didn't know was that I told my uncle, I said, oh, uncle, because I used to go for my lunch every day. That was his contribution to my reduced wage. I used to go for my lunch every day. I said, uncle, I've joined the Territorial Army. And he said, what do you want to get mixed up with all those bloody Irishmen for? So when these people used to accuse me of having joined the Territorial Army to curry favour with my uncle, I always used to laugh rather heartily.
So
I really wanted
quite
to.
Quite a number of Irish people in the Terriers.
Oh, a lot of Irishmen in the Terriers. Oh, yes, quite a lot of them. You see, the accent of Concert is basically Irish, and an awful lot of Irishmen. And I remember, once again, a relic, I suppose, of my childhood and so on, but when I took the Bible in my hand and swore to serve King George V, his heirs and successors, so help me God, I had an elevation of spirit, which has lasted to this very day. As a matter of fact, nowadays, when I see some of the younger royals who are the heirs and successors of King George V acting what I consider as an unkind and untimely manner, I say to myself, Williams, remember your oath. So, that's it. And there was the permanent staff instructor was a regular company sergeant major from the Durham Light Infantry called Company Sergeant Major Mason. And he had the DCM and MM. And he became a hero to me when I saw him. Very nice bloke he was. He used to wonder sometimes why we were such idiots to do this in our spare time and practically get nothing for it. And I remember I said to him, Sergeant Major, how did you win the DCM and the MM? He said, well, I said, because I saw in your record, because I sometimes used to help me out, that you got the first medal for encouraging the men whilst under heavy attack from the Germans. How did you encourage the men, Sergeant Major? said, I just said, I'll shoot the first bugger who tries to go back.